It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at BigBlueInsider1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge as we wrap up the week. And lo and behold, we were talking about the Kentucky bowl game victory over NC State down in Jacksonville at the Tax Slayer Bowl. Wouldn't you know, they're replaying that on the SEC Network. So keep your radio on or keep your phone handy with the iHeartMedia app punched up. But you have our permission to just turn the sound off on the game. Keep an eye on that as you listen to us. We're going to keep right on talking football with the gentleman who, as I mentioned earlier, is one of the best linebackers ever to play at Kentucky. He was an all-conference performer in 08, was a freshman All-American his first year at Kentucky, and made the biggest tackle in the history of Commonwealth Stadium in that upset. It shut down LSU. It ended the upset win over the LSU Tigers. He is Coach Braxton Kelly, now a high school football head coach down at his home state of Georgia. Good evening, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
We're well. Thank you so much. And first of all, congrats on your coaching career. How much are you enjoying that?
Man, I'm very excited. It's definitely a new task for me. I'm embracing all of the new things that I have to take care of as a head coach, but I'm really excited for the upcoming season.
It's a lot more. It's as much off the field as on the field, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more dealing with, especially since I was at college, I have to deal with a lot more parent situations now, talking to about playing time and things like that. Oh. And just making sure that I can, the practice time is all a little different. The physical things, making sure all the paperwork is in, those are things that I really didn't have to do as an assistant coach, but I have to do now as a head coach to make sure everything's going good on the field.
You played at a high level. You played a little bit in the NFL. You played under some really fine coaches at Kentucky. How well did that prepare you for your high school coaching career?
Man, I took something from every single coach that I played for. Whether it was Chuck Smith at Kentucky, Rich Brooks as well, whether it was the NFL, from Coach Wink Martindale, who's now defensive coordinator at the Baltimore Ravens, whether it was Coach Steve Pardue, who had the biggest influence on me, I think, of actually wanting to become a coach, seeing the success that he had as a high school coach at LaGrange, where he was able to pull off winning three state championships while I attended LaGrange High School. I took something from each and every one of those coaches, and I'm trying to apply it to my coaching philosophy as well. So hopefully everything comes to fruition, and I'll be able to have same success some of my coaches had in the future. So I'm trying my best to make sure that I have everything in order, whether it's defensively, offensively, special teams wise. Just trying to build a philosophy that really hones in on hard work, dedication, commitment, as well as having high character guys on my football team.
I am guessing that you don't bring it up, but how much, if at all, do your kids ask you about playing in the SEC or being in the NFL?
They ask me a lot. They ask me a lot. I would say probably maybe once every 2 weeks, once or twice a week, some weeks. They ask me a lot, and a lot of my players really aspire to play in the SEC, aspire to play college football. So every little thing that I can give them that I learned on the way, I try to make sure I give them. They always ask me to see highlights and things like that. I never show it to them. I tell them find it on their own. But but it's just something that I'm not a person who's always bragging about it, but when push comes to shove, I do remind them who I am and what I've done.
Well, I don't blame you. You've earned that. But it's also now with this image and likeness issue up, you know, we are constantly reminded, and we media remind people that, you know, a tiny percentage of you guys can get into an NFL camp, and you made it, not just an all-conference SEC player, but but you were in camp of the Broncos. How do you balance reminding kids of that? Look, it's you know, get your education, make football work for you, but you don't want to dash their hopes and dreams of playing pro ball, but you got to make sure that they understand how tough it is.
I look at it as like almost making sure that you have plan A, and you sell all out with plan A. And I 100% believe that if you have a plan B, then you don't plan on making plan A work. But at the same time, while I'm on the way, there has to be processes put in order for me to realize that I'm not going to play football for the rest of my life regardless. Right. So I have to make sure that I set things in order, whether it be by making sure I have my education, getting my degree, and things like that. I have to have all that in order to be a successful player, in order to be a successful person in life, because at the end of the day, at some point, you're not going to play football. I promise you, Tom Brady is eventually going to age out. I promise you, eventually it's going to happen. But, of course, we know every other position, you don't get to play as long as he's being able to make it go. But you have to have a backup plan. Like I said, sell out with plan A, but you have to have a backup plan. And with the likeness thing and all of that, students possibly being able to make money off of their likeness, I'm all for it. But you still have to know what you're there for. Mm-hmm. Winning has to count for something, all right? Winning has to count for something. And at some point, it can get kind of hazy on what some of the kids' real motivation is. But if your motivation is money, your motivation is to play in the NFL, you'll bust your butt in and out on the field as well as in the classroom in order to make those money. Because you got to remember, it's not about just making money; it's about keeping money.
Yeah.
And in order to keep money, you have to have education.
Mm-hmm. Braxton, you mentioned the motivation of your athletes, and my question is: how different are your high school football practices than back when you started, back when you played high school? How different is it motivating these millennials and Gen Zers?
Oh, it's definitely a lot different. as coaches, we've had this conversation a lot because some players some players that are very internally motivated. They have a goal that they set for themselves, and they're going to do whatever they can to accomplish that goal. But I see a lot now where it's a lot of external motivation. No matter how you're motivated, if you work towards that goal, then it's all fine and dandy. But right now with the social media world, a kid thinks because he makes two or three highlight catches that he's a Division I receiver now, rather than putting in the work day in and day out to accomplish that goal. So I think the motivation of kids now kind of stems off who gets to see them. So that's the biggest thing with the social media and how it can actually push you, is because all these kids around the country who shine in football games, they have immediate access to create a highlight film and show what they can do. Mm-hmm. If I'm not making plays on Friday night, I can't do that. So I don't get the validation or the praise that I want. So it would intrinsically motivate me to make plays or to be that player that no matter what it takes, I'm going to work harder than ever to be the best player that I can be.
Talking to Braxton Kelly, former Kentucky linebacker, now a head coach down in his home state of Georgia, high school coach. We've talked about a lot of important stuff. I'm about to bust. I got to talk to you about that LSU game. It was so much fun to cover. I can't imagine what it was like to be in the middle of that. But I mentioned the fact that you made a lot of plays that night, but you happened to make the one that was the one end of the game. And I grabbed, you know, you don't remember this, but I grabbed you on the field immediately afterwards and asked you how it happened. Do you? Well, and you basically just said you read the play. You read the guard pulling. You were so well prepared for that play, weren't you?
Yes, sir, I was. It's something that we had watched on film, some things they had done throughout the week. And we had already known that the head ball coach at LSU loved to go for it on fourth down.
Yep.
So it kind of helped us realize, hey, when they go for it, they pretty much trying to run the ball. So when they got in the formation and they motioned the tight end across, I pretty much knew right then and there, if you could see me creeping up, that it was about to be a guard pull. And something a lot of people don't know unless you play linebacker. You go underneath the guard, and you can go underneath the guard, even though he's really pulling to block you. You go underneath the guard, you shoot underneath and make the tackle, and that's one of the biggest plays in UK history. So it was definitely something that I didn't know how big it was at the time, but you and several other people out after the game really made me realize, hey, man, you know you really made history. And it's funny because a few weeks ago I received a call from a dad who named his son after me because of the LSU tackle when the mom was in labor.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever heard. How'd you feel about that?
I felt awesome, man. And it's funny because it's not the first time. I actually signed the year after that, 2008, actually signed an autograph for another kid that whose parent had did the same thing.
That's how important that win was.
At the same time, but it's good to know that, hey, based off of the point performance that I had, that someone really thought, hey, Braxton Kelly, that name has a little buzz to it. Maybe you can just name it. Maybe you can be the number one. Beat the number one day.
Well, and you know what else happened? I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but I think it was Gary Henderson, the baseball coach, or maybe John Cohen, who was the head coach at the time, told me that there were recruits, baseball recruits, who were either at the game or watching on TV, and they saw the fans rush the field and tear down the goalposts, and they were so excited for the football team's win that they had baseball recruits committing on the spot that night. Had you ever heard that?
Wow, I had never heard that, but that definitely goes to show how contagious winning can be. Like recruiting is huge. Like those type of moments when colleges are able to display those type of moments on television, whether it be a national champion in other sports and things like that, that really draws kids to you. So it's definitely refreshing to hear that. I made some baseball recruits commit based off of making big plays in a football game.
Yep. Well, it was just a lot of fun, you know. And having witnessed that, having been a part of all that now, how much more do you appreciate what Rich Brooks was able to accomplish getting there a little bit before you got there? But, you know, they had NCAA penalties and the numbers were down, but, you know, he stuck by his guns with his system and turn that into a winning program. As a head coach now, how much more appreciation do you have of Rich Brooks?
Man, I definitely appreciate 100% because when I look at how he built the program, he didn't take any shortcuts. Like I'm not taking any shortcuts. We're going to work for everything that we get. We got better day in and day out by practicing and getting better. It wasn't an easy fix. It wasn't a quick fix. It was a grind. We did all the grind and the grunt work in order to get better. We didn't go out here and just try to throw some gimmick offense together, gimmick defense together to try to win games. We did it like it was supposed to be done. We got better as players. We developed players. He developed players. And that's the same goal that I have. My goal is, We're not just going to throw things together scheme-wise and try to out-scheme our opponents. We're also going to make sure that each and every one of my players is coached to the best of our ability to excel at the position, not only at the high school level, but are able to go into the college level and compete at a high level like I was, because I was taught well by my coaches in high school.
Mm-hmm. You were prepared. And, you know, what you describe with Rich Brooks is exactly, and I think this is why Brooks likes him so much is what Mark Stoops is doing. And, you know, he said it's not going to be quick, it's not going to be easy, and we're not going to skip any steps or cut any corners. I know you've been back a little bit. What do you think of what you've seen over the last few years with Kentucky football?
Man, I really like what I've seen. I seen us getting so much better on defense. I seen us get draft picks left and right now. So being able to see that, what we're doing recruiting-wise at UK, what we're able to do in actually putting together big winning records in seasons like that, having number one draft picks like Josh Allen going to NFL, having guys like Bud Dupree and some of those other guys who've had successes they had in the NFL, it really shows that no steps were skipped. When you're able to put players in the NFL day in and day out every single year, that means you're actually developing people. You're actually you actually know what you're doing and know what you're going out there. You see in the athleticism that those students possess in high school. You're able to come in, develop it, and then and win football games. But from what I also see is he's able to utilize what he has, no matter what it is, whether it's a guy like Lynn Bowden who didn't play any quarterback. Well, he played in high school, but he didn't play quarterback
right. In
college. But he goes
right.
in and he pulls off these amazing rushing feats in games where they know he's running the ball. He hardly ever passed the ball. I'm getting the ball every play. Figure it out. Stop me.
Yeah.
But when you're able to do that, you're coaching. You're developing players. That's what that's something that sticks out the most when it comes to Stoops and what he's able to do as a football coach. Put things together. Defensive backfield has gotten phenomenal. Each and every year there's a draft pick or at least a draft prospect in the secondary. So that really sticks out. Linebacker wise, I was there a couple of days ago, and was able to meet some of the linebackers that currently play there. So I really see a high ceiling for those guys as well. But he has it going in the right direction. I really appreciate what he's doing with the program.
Well, I hope you like what you saw when you met those linebackers. Finally, the biggest hurdle right now, of course, Florida's always tough. Tennessee is struggling, and Kentucky took advantage at least last year. But as you well know now, the road to the East runs through Athens, Georgia, your home state. Do you think the Wildcats sometime soon can get past the Bulldogs?
I really do think that we can. We just have to put a good game plan together, and we have to be a little bit better two-dimensional than what we've been in the past. In the past, obviously, been more of a running threat, but we have to be able to throw the ball a little bit to beat teams like that. Can't become one-dimensional. You have to be able to throw the ball as well as pass the ball and play well on special teams. Defensively, we played pretty well in the past. Obviously, at times, games get out of hand towards the more defenses stay on the field and get worn out. But if we're able to move the ball offensively, make stops defensively, and play well in the special teams game, we should be able to win against Georgia.
Well, Braxton, it's been a pleasure talking to you as always, and best of luck with your team. And I hope if you have an open date and you come up, you holler at me if you see me on the sidelines. But it was a pleasure covering your career at Kentucky, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks a lot, man. Anytime you feel the need to call, give me a call. I'll definitely come back on again.
I will do that. Thanks so much, Coach. Have a good one. Take it easy.
You too.
That's bye-bye. Braxton Kelly, former Kentucky linebacker, made the tackle that won the LSU game. We're back in a minute on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Coach Braxton Kelly for joining us. Coming up, more from Mitch Barnhart on the image and likeness changes in college football. Scottie Pippen is now feuding what seems like with everybody, Kevin Durant, Charles Barkley. But I will say that on a positive note, the LA Dodgers did something that was really cool. Jock Peterson spent 6 years with the Dodgers, helped them win a title in 2020, signed with the Cubs in the offseason, couldn't be there for their ring ceremony and the banner raising in April. But when the Cubs came to LA last night, Chicago threw a team no-hitter. Peterson could finally rejoice with his teammates and got his ring. But the Dodgers did something really cool. They gave a ring to Champ Peterson. That's Jock's older brother, who has Down syndrome. And he had always been around his brother in several activities in L.A. over the years. In fact, Champ threw out the first pitch to Jock on his brother's bobblehead night. Classy move by the Dodgers. Gotta like him for that.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
.280-228-7800-606-4263. You can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Scottie Pippen making headlines for weird reasons, feuding with Kevin Durant. He got into Durant, and then Durant got right back at him, reminding people that for some reason, can you remember, Billy, why he even got into Durant at all? But it was easy for Durant to come back at him by reminding people that Scottie Pippen wouldn't go into a game, thanks to the Last Dance documentary on Michael Jordan that dug deeply into the controversy when Scottie refused to go into a game because the coach would not draw up the play that had him taking the last shot. This got a little nasty, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Scottie Pippen was talking about Kevin Durant when he lost that Game 7 despite scoring 48 points.
Yeah.
He said Durant didn't play team basketball. He tried to go blow for blow with the other team, and that's what them ended up losing. So he called him selfish.
Like he had any choice.
Right.
You know, what else did Brooklyn have at that point?
Well, it injured Kyrie Irving that wasn't playing. James Harden was on one good ankle.
One-legged Harden, who was so weak that, like I said, when I'm watching a game, I forgot that he was in the game because he wasn't doing anything. So it kind of surprised me that Scottie goes public with his criticism. And again, Durant, I think, got the better of it. I mean, anybody who saw that game knew that was ridiculous. And then Pippen was blasting Charles Barkley, who was his teammate in Houston. And I'm going to watch tonight. I hope I haven't missed it. But he talked about the fact, basically, that, and he told GQ magazine in an interview that was published Thursday, that Barkley's name is not synonymous with winning in the league only when his name comes up with Team USA in the Olympics. But when it comes to the NBA, no. Now, Barkley played for championships, never won one. Of course, Scottie, terrific player, owes a hell of a lot to Michael Jordan, so he can always hold that over Barkley. But basically, they got into it personally. He said Barkley owed him an apology for, quote, coming to play with his fat butt. And he said, Barkley said he always had a gun on him, and, quote, if I get arrested for murder, y'all know he didn't apologize. So,
and
Pippen said that he never will. He said he said Barkley basically played at being tough. He said he only got arrested for throwing some little white guys out of a window. Said, I ain't never seen him fight a black man unless there were referees around. He plays his role like he's tough. I don't know nobody he done whooped. Go back and check his record.
Man, is Pippen still pissed off for the amount of money he made during his prime? Like,
well,
he's just going off on people.
Maybe. I don't know. I guess whoever was doing the interview pushed the right button. But Barkley's on TNT tonight, so you got a chance at seeing the comeback from Barkley. Pippen played 98-99 with the Rockets, averaged 14.5 points, 6.5 rebounds. And I'd forgotten about this, Billy. He was later traded to the Trailblazers for six players.
Six guys for one?
Six players for Scottie Pippen.
Wow.
On the tail end of his career. So, okay, back we were talking in the first hour, if you're just joining us, about the image and likeness issue. Mitch Barnhart talked to the media today via Zoom, and he talked earlier about the fact that this is a process. It's going to take a while. We asked him about whether or not he anticipates the recruiting process becoming a bidding war, and he said he certainly hopes that kids remember, and the goal will be to remind them, look, you got to get your education, because a tiny percentage of people make it professionally, not just in basketball, football, or baseball. There are other sports, track and field, swimming. You can be a pro. Volleyball, you can be a pro. You're not going to get rich, but get the degree, get your athletic training, and make yourself some money on the side. Why not? And somebody asked him, somebody said they had heard that some players were already thinking and talking about opportunities, and he said, yeah, they've already had some conversations with players about that.
I think that there's things we have been made aware of in terms of things that might be available to our student athletes. How that gets monetized and who gets to monetize those is really interesting. It's foreign territory for me as a person. That's not something that I enjoy, and it's not something I'm going to take advantage of. But at the end of the day, I know that our young people may want that opportunity. And if they do, then we've got to figure out a way to help them understand both the sides of what it means to assign their name and their image and their likeness to that, and what that can look like and the expectations that go with that. So I think we just continue to work through that. I think, again, Rachel has done a remarkable job of getting us prepared. But we've been doing this a long time in terms of preparing our young people for the new world as they leave Kentucky. Now we've just fast-tracked it, and now they're going to get a bigger idea of what it looks like while they're at Kentucky. And so I think that it's certainly a changing landscape.
I thought it was interesting, Billy, that he brought that up, that he reminded people that this isn't brand new, that they have tried their best to help kids, not just kids who are going to go to the pros and make money, but help all of them prepare for a life outside of college athletics. Because you know as well as I that some folks get out there, they're not Braxton Kelly. When football ended for Braxton Kelly, he knew what he wanted to do. He wanted to coach and became an assistant coach and now is a head coach and is well prepared for that. So I thought it was interesting, and I'd frankly forgotten about that they are active when it comes to trying to prep these kids for the real world.
And that's, I think, a lot that goes into our conversation about the value of a scholarship, the value of education, and what these kids are actually getting before this name, image, and likeness and all the dollars come into it. Because, you know, Dick, even though we fight on this topic a lot, I can admit that there are plenty of opportunities that college athletes are able to take part in at their universities, and an education that they can gain to better themselves in the future.
Yeah.
And that is not worth nothing.
No, and it's not just book learning. And by the way, that's available to everybody, quite frankly, if you go after it. I had 3 different internships when I worked in college, and 2 for newspapers and 1 for broadcast, where I actually worked for Kaywood Ledford for about a month over the Christmas break, and at WHAS in Louisville. That's what actually put into my head the possibility of going into the broadcast side of journalism when I got out. And the reason I became a broadcast journalist as opposed to a newspaper guy was I got a couple of offers from newspapers. I got an offer from a radio station in Lexington. That was a better offer. So I did that, and that's why I'm talking to you tonight. So, it's not just the book learning. You know, it is stuff like that that's available, not just to athletes, but to everybody at UK or and just about any college. But I think the fact that the athletic department, you know, they try to at least nudge people in that direction, that's obviously going to be key. We talked in the first hour about the fact that they've got to be reminded about, you know, what's important. But we also talked about the fact that you don't want to discourage them from getting what they can, obviously. So Barnhart talked about the importance for UK to help student athletes find that balance.
I think that those that are thoughtful about how they do this have an opportunity to do some really remarkable things that would be uniquely different for them and would help set them up for life after athletics. We always talk about how many people actually go pro in the landscape. It's very few. So there's people out there, and I go to the young woman who has the most social media of anybody in our department. And I would venture to say most of you don't know that. It's Masai Russell. Masai Russell has the largest media following, social media following of anybody in our department by far. It's not close. but she doesn't wake up every day just rolling out and saying, okay, who all's going to join me? She works at it. And she works at it not because she's a tremendous track athlete, which, oh, by the way, she is. She works at it because she's found a way in a niche in what she is trying to do for life beyond track and field to be able to put something together for her. And so that's the kind of thoughtfulness that it will take for us to be able to watch them, help them, for them to be able to help themselves and find their way to this unique spot. And that's really, really a cool thing.
By the way, Masai Russell, if you don't know that name, is a junior, just finished her junior year. I guess she's still competing, but she's a three-time All-American, or at least she's a multiple All-American, but was an All-American freshman, sophomore, now junior year. And she's part of that 4x400 meter relay team, finished fifth in the country, and she's just tremendous. But she'll be a pro. You know, there is a pro track circuit. I think it's bigger in Europe than it is in the U.S., but as Barnhart said, you know, she's got a plan. You know, good for her. Good for her.
You know, there's a real possibility, Dick, that the kids that make the most money aren't the best players on the team. They may not be the guys going to the National Football League.
Yeah.
But they have a quirkiness or, you know, something interesting about them. The only thing I'm worried about is the emphasis on Twitter followers and how many social media followers you have, because I think that is going to play a lot into maybe a business being willing to work with you.
Why does that worry you?
I mean,
I know Twitter can be toxic, but beyond that, why do you say that word?
I think my goals would change if I was a young teenager and you told me if I had more Twitter followers than this person, then I could be paid more immediately than maybe he could.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's interesting because, and I don't know if those of you tuning in late, but Barnhart talked about that in hour number one, that they need to protect the players, the athletes as well. That's part of their job. Make sure they do smart things. So that's a great point. And that goes back to what he talked about with regard to making sure players make sound decisions. Before he left us, John Hale, thank goodness, took the opportunity to ask Barnhart. He said, we haven't had a chance to talk to you in a while. Could you answer a question about basketball? He said, you know, what's your evaluation of the men's basketball program? And he flat out asked him, did you encourage Calipari to make changes in his staff?
You know, obviously it's not where we want to be. Our goal is to hang banners in Rupp Arena and win number 9 and bring that back to the Bluegrass for our fans. And so that will be supremely focused on that. And I just encouraged Cal to take whatever steps he needed to do within what he thought was best for our program to move forward and to get us back to the spot where we know we belong. That is the place we are comfortable is talking about deep runs in March. And that's who we want to be. We went through a really difficult year with COVID. It was a challenging year from a lot of perspectives with a team that was fairly new and together in terms of their togetherness. You know, I had some problems getting to the finish line and gelling. Not what we wanted, but we're supremely focused on number 9 and getting back to obviously New Orleans would be a wonderful reunion back there in March of next year. And so that's our focus.
Yeah. New Orleans is where it happened in 2012. So clearly he's got his eye on basketball. And you know, it's funny, Billy, through the years, Barnhart has been one of the strongest ADs in America when it comes to having a well-rounded, well-balanced athletic department. And it's amazing how many people have said to me, have grumbled about that. And it said, does he know how important basketball is? Come on now. You know, and they said the same thing about Eli Capiluto. Does he understand how important football is? This is a guy who came from Alabama, not the University of, but the state of Alabama to the University of Kentucky. You know, yeah, this is their stock and trade, folks. They know what they're talking about, and they know what's important. So, but I thought it was interesting, too, that he encouraged Calipari to do whatever it took, you know, do the things you think are important for your staff. Do you think there was a hidden message there?
I do. If you don't think that Mitch Barnhart wasn't having his gears grinded, being the selection committee chair of the NCAA tournament the year that Kentucky did not get into the tournament, then You know, I have some real estate to sell you. But seriously, I think that that was some great leadership by him. I think any other answer would be not enough for some of the most crazy Big Blue Nation fans.
Well, look, Calipari knows what's what. And, you know, people still go back to that comment he made on draft night, which is was strictly about recruiting. This is the most important. You know, no. He is keenly aware that, and I haven't talked to him about this, nor will I. He may talk about it publicly. He is keenly aware that the Kansas Jayhawks, who lay ahead on his schedule, are creeping up on their all-time wins record. And I've told you before that when I was producing a documentary, a DVD, that very few people saw because of how it was handled in terms of marketing, but I won't get into that. But I will tell you this, that John Calipari would not sit down and talk to us about getting 2,000 wins until the night of the 2,000th win. I mean, we tried to get him to sit down, and we said, look, we will not use any of this interview, not on the news, not on the radio, nothing, until you get that number 2,000, whenever it is, and we put it in the documentary, we put it on the DVD, and sent it to the DVD producer. Nope, would not talk about it because they didn't use the word jinx, but that was basically what it was about. He so wanted to be the first program to get to 2,000. So you know that that is all over his head. And it's tough now because you know as well as I that Kansas made up a lot of ground last year.
Yeah, that's going to be a talking point, Dick. If Cal gets passed, then, you know, get ready for the Coach Cal show Mondays right here on News Radio 630 WLAP.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is no matter how much he downplays it or tries to, what do you think ESPN, or I don't even know who's got the game, CBS, don't ESPN, what do you think they're going to do with that storyline?
Oh, big graphics. Big graphics, Dick. First storyline as the ball is tipped.
And not just that, I guarantee you that's going to be the promo material the entire week. That will be the lead line in every promo that features the Big 12 SEC Challenge UK versus Kansas. KU, UK, here we go.
How close are they, do you know?
Four wins. Or four losses, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
And, of course, whichever team wins that game will actually make up a couple of games because, you know, one team will have another win, one will have another loss. So, anyhow, we'll wrap things up when we come back on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to our guests, Anthony White and Braxton Kelly. Fun talking lots of football tonight, and we'll keep doing it next week. In fact, we're going to talk to Carlos Phillips, who is a former Kentucky linebacker. His son is a UK recruit. We'll talk as much about his career as his son, we should tell you. And, well, you know, we've got some more football chatter online for next week. But I've got to ask Mr. Rutledge about the one more note this week. We've kind of beaten it to death, but it's kind of fun. The Brooks Koepka versus Bryson DeChambeau feud. And a lot of people, Billy, think it goes back to that video bomb incident, but it doesn't. It goes back, I read what you sent me, it goes back to January of 2019.
Yeah, way back. A couple different mediums that these guys have exchanged blows at. They used to be teammates at an event.
Yeah.
One time, and it's
you had the slow play issue,
yes,
in Dubai.
That's what it was. Yep. Yeah. Brooks complained about Bryson DeChambeau's slow play, kind of a little back and forth here and there. Bryson DeChambeau is on Twitch playing Fortnite, the video game, and makes a comment about Brooks Koepka's abs, about his physique. Brooks, you know, is listening to this, so a little chirp back and forth here and there, and you know that was all waiting under the rubble, right? That was all right there, ready when the video happened. And when the video happened, it exploded into a different stratosphere.
And, you know, when I read that, and I kind of knew about this. I don't follow it as much as you do. But, I, you know, I had read about it, heard about it. There was a little chirping going on. And slow play is an issue, and a lot of people are part of that conversation. But at one point, they talked to each other. And at one point, DeChambeau said it was fantastic talking to Brooks. I appreciate that he came to me. I have high respect for him because he did that. And then the abs thing came up, and it's just all just it's kind of, I won't say it's childish, but it's childlike because it's not really all that ugly. But and I think it's good for the game. I don't know about you. I think it's fun.
It is. And, you know, I don't know how many golf rounds that you've had, Dick, with a player that takes a little bit too long, it can easily get your blood pressure.
Oh, yeah. The practice swings and the cocking the wrist over and over, and, you know, people reading putts left, right, up, down, go to the opposite side of the green.
Oh, and then you're going to cut your clubs the same length, all of them, and then you're going to hit the ball farther than everybody.
It just didn't bother me the way it bothers you, but we'll agree to disagree on that. That's going to do it. Have a great weekend. Stay safe out there. For Billy, Dick Gabriel, that's it. Good night from the garage in Lexington.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.